Good evening, True Seekers. Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. I had sent an email to Dana Petrino telling her to hold the president's speech until we got on the air. It wasn't answered, so I'm not sure exactly what happened. Maybe she didn't open her email tonight. It has started. Let's join it in progress, and then we will have the knee-slapping part of the program when Mr. Bush is finished.
Throughout Iraq, too many citizens are being killed by terrorists and death squads. And for most Iraqis, the quality of life is far from where it should be. Yet General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker report that the success in Anbar is beginning to be replicated in other parts of the country. 1 year ago, much of Baghdad was under siege. Schools were closed, markets were shuttered, and sectarian violence was spiraling out of control. Today, most of Baghdad's neighborhoods are being patrolled by coalition and Iraqi forces who live among the people they protect. Many schools and markets are reopening. Citizens are coming forward with vital intelligence. Sectarian killings are down, and ordinary life is beginning to return. 1 year ago, much of Diyala province was a sanctuary for Al-Qaeda and other extremist groups, and its capital of Baquba was emerging as an Al-Qaeda stronghold. Today, Baquba is cleared. Diyala province is the site of a growing popular uprising against the extremists, and some local tribes are working alongside coalition and Iraqi forces to clear out the enemy and reclaim their communities. 1 year ago, Shia extremists and Iranian-backed militants were gaining strength and targeting Sunnis for assassination. Today, these groups are being broken up, and many of their leaders are being captured or killed. These gains are a tribute to our military. They are a tribute to the courage of the Iraqi security forces, and they are the tribute to an Iraqi government that has decided to take on the extremists. Now the Iraqi government must bring the same determination to achieving reconciliation. This is an enormous undertaking after more than three decades of tyranny and division. The government has not met its own legislative benchmarks, and in my meetings with Iraqi leaders, I have made it clear that they must. Yet Iraq's national leaders are getting some things done. For example, they have passed a budget. They are sharing oil revenues with the provinces. They are allowing former Baathists to rejoin Iraq's military or receive government pensions. Local reconciliation is taking place. The key now is to link this progress in the provinces to progress in Baghdad. As local politics change, so will national politics. Our troops in Iraq are performing brilliantly. Along with the Iraqi forces, they have captured or killed an average of more than 1,500 enemy fighters per month since January. Yet ultimately, the way forward depends on the ability of Iraqis to maintain security gains. According to General Petraeus and a panel chaired by retired General Jim Jones, the Iraqi army is becoming more capable, although there's still a great deal of work to be done to improve the national police. Iraqi forces are receiving increased cooperation from local populations, and this is improving their ability to hold areas that have been cleared. Because of this success, General Petraeus believes we have now reached the point where we can maintain our security gains with fewer American forces. He has recommended that we not replace about 2,200 Marines scheduled to leave Anbar province later this month. In addition, he says it will soon be possible to bring home an Army Combat Brigade for a total force reduction of 5,700 troops by Christmas. And he expects that by July, we will be able to reduce our troop levels in Iraq from 20 combat brigades to 15. General Petraeus also recommends that in December, we begin transitioning to the next phase of our strategy in Iraq. As terrorists are defeated, civil society takes root, and the Iraqis assume more control over their own security, our mission in Iraq will evolve. Over time, our troops will shift from leading operations to partnering with Iraqi forces and eventually to overwatching those forces. As this transition in our mission takes place, our troops will focus on a more limited set of tasks, including counterterrorism operations, and training, equipping, and supporting Iraqi forces. I have consulted with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, other members of my national security team, Iraqi officials, and leaders of both parties in Congress. I have benefited from their advice, and I have accepted General Petraeus's recommendations. I have directed General Petraeus and Ambassador Crocker to update their joint campaign plan for Iraq so we can adjust our military and civilian resources accordingly. I have also directed them to deliver another report to Congress in March. At that time, they will provide a fresh assessment of the situation in Iraq and of the troop levels and resources we need to meet our national security objectives. The principle guiding my decisions on troop levels in Iraq is return on success. The more successful we are, the more American troops can return home. And in all we do, I will ensure that our commanders on the ground have the troops and flexibility they need to defeat the enemy. Americans want our country to be safe and our troops to begin coming home from Iraq. Yet those of us who believe success in Iraq is essential to our security, and those who believe we should begin bringing our troops home, have been at odds. Now, because of the measure of success we're seeing in Iraq, we can begin seeing troops come home. The way forward I've described tonight makes it possible, for the first time in years, for people who have been on opposite sides of this difficult debate to come together. This vision for a reduced American presence also has the support of Iraqi leaders from all communities. At the same time, they understand that their success will require U.S. political, economic, and security engagement that extends beyond my presidency. These Iraqi leaders have asked for an enduring relationship with America, and we are ready to begin building that relationship in a way that protects our interests in the region and requires many fewer American troops. The success of a free Iraq is critical to the security of the United States. A free Iraq will deny al-Qaeda a safe haven. A free Iraq will counter the destructive ambitions of Iran. A free Iraq will marginalize extremists, unleash the talent of its people, and be an anchor of stability in the region. A free Iraq will set an example for people across the Middle East. A free Iraq will be our partner in the fight against terror. And that will make us safer here at home. Realizing this vision will be difficult, but it is achievable. Our military commanders believe we can succeed. Our diplomats believe we can succeed. And for the safety of future generations of Americans, we must succeed. If we were to be driven out of Iraq, extremists of all strains would be emboldened. Al-Qaeda could gain new recruits and new sanctuaries. Iran would benefit from the chaos and would be encouraged in its efforts to gain nuclear weapons and dominate the region. Extremists could control a key part of the global energy supply. Iraq could face a humanitarian nightmare. Democracy movements would be violently reversed. We would leave our children to face a far more dangerous world. And as we saw on September the 11th, 2001, those dangers can reach our cities and kill our people. Whatever political party you belong to, whatever your position on Iraq, we should be able to agree that America has
right,
a vital
look,
interest
all
in preventing
right,
chaos.
Kathy, pat it all the way down. You know, I try. I try. I honest to God do to put this this freak on. I can't do this. I can't do this. He is saying absolutely nothing that makes any sense whatsoever. Witness after witness, people who have actually been in Iraq, whether they go there as members of Congress or civilians or correspondents or soldiers, have refuted every single thing this jackass is saying. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll go ahead and take a break when we're supposed to here. And when this nonsense is over, we will play Senator Edwards' response if we can work around these commercials. All right, but I just can't do this. I really can't. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
The world has changed after September the 11th. It's changed because we're no longer safe.
Saddam Hussein is determined to get his hands on a nuclear bomb.
Nuclear weapon.
Nuclear weapon.
Nuclear weapon.
You've lied to us, you frickin' liar. Your party's going to hell in a blazing ball of fire. And you lie, lie, lie.
All right, Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island, I believe, is Democrat, is giving the official Democratic response. Let's listen a little bit of this.
Take a solemn oath to protect our nation. And we have a solemn responsibility to send them into battle only with clear and achievable missions. Tonight, the president provided neither. As a former Army officer, I know the great sacrifices our soldiers and their families make. Our military can defeat any foe on the battlefield. Yet, as General Petraeus has repeatedly stated, Iraq's fundamental problems are not military, they are political. The only way to create a lasting peace in Iraq is for Iraqi leaders to negotiate a settlement of their long-standing differences. When the president launched the surge in January, he told us that its purpose was to provide Iraqi leaders with the time to make that political progress. But now, 9 months into the surge, the president's own advisors tell us that Iraq's leaders have not and are not likely to do so. Meanwhile, thousands of brave Americans remain in the crossfire of another country's civil war. So tonight, we find ourselves at a critical moment. Do we continue to heed the president's call that all Iraq needs is more time, more money, and the indefinite presence of 130,000 American troops, the same number as 9 months ago? Or do we follow what is in our nation's best interest and redefine our mission in Iraq? Democrats believe it is a time to change course. We think it's wrong that the president tells us there's not enough money for our veterans and children's health care because he is spending $10 billion a month in Iraq. We have put forth a plan to responsibly and rapidly begin a reduction of our troops. Our proposal cannot erase the...
All right, with all due respect, Senator Reed, I realize you're a Democrat, and so am I, and I realize you're answering the coward-in-chief and this rat bastard who has sent over 3,700 soldiers and a million civilians to their deaths. But I'll tell you what, Senator Reed, I just want to hear it. I'll tell you when this is what I want to hear from Democrats. I want to hear a Democrat come out and say, not in my language because I'm not as well spoken as a member of the House or the Senate, but I'd like to see maybe 8 or 9 Democrats come out, 3 or 4 from the House, 3 or 4 from the Senate, or 4 or 5 from the House, 4 or 5 from the Senate, stand there and say, all right, here's what we've decided. George W. Bush is a delusional, sociopathic killer, and everyone around him shares those visions of Boschian hell. So I'll tell you what we're going to have to do. Since we no longer are a body in as duly constituted that provides a check and balance on this monster, we are going to impeach him. So we are standing here this morning in solidarity. We senators and House members, we have the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee here, who is going to introduce 7 articles of impeachment. There could be more against this clown, this murderous clown, but we're going to leave it at 7. So that's our plan. And may God bless America, and God bless the rainbow trout, and may God bless your latest ice cream dish, and may God bless anything you want God to bless. But that's what we're going to do. We're going after this bastard because he's destroying our country, he's breaking our government, he's eating alive our military, and he's acting like a 5-year-old who continues to throw temper tantrums and act out because he can, because nobody will stop this little craphead. So we're going to do it. So we are here tonight, ladies and gentlemen, or this morning, whatever time it is, we've lost track, to let you know that we, the Democratic Caucus, are going after this son of a bitch, and we will not rest until he is legally and peacefully removed from office. God bless you and your mama. Now, until The Democrats have the courage to do what the Democrats are supposed to do. And that's not to follow their own inclinations. It's not to test the political winds. It's not to stick their hands in their mouths and then raise their hands and see which way the wind is blowing. That's not what they're to do. They're not to protect their political careers. They're not to kowtow to the corporate bastards who put them in office too. I'll tell you what the Democrats' job is. They take an oath. It is to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States. And that means removing this psychopathic bastard from office. Nothing else, Democrats. I don't care. You can talk till you're blue in the face. I'm sick of it. Get him out! He's destroying what's left of this country. This has been a 6.5 year ride into hell with this guy. What do you people need? What do you Democrats in Congress need? What is it going to take before someone takes a sharp pole and rams it up your rear end to get your attention? The man is crushing America. Do something! And you don't even have to be creative, Democrats. Do what the Constitution instructs you to do. And until then, all of you, sit down and shut up.
I know there's a lot of speculation that these reports in Washington mean there's going to be some kind of graceful exit out of Iraq. We're going to stay in Iraq to get the job done.
What does anybody listening to this program have any idea what he was talking about or what he was referring to when he said there were 36 nations that make up the coalition forces who are now fighting in Iraq? What the hell is he talking about? This is just pure insanity. And how can he use Al-Anbar province as an example when a bomb attack today killed the U.S.-backed leader of the Sunni Muslim Alliance that was praised by Bush for trying to drive Al-Qaeda out of Iraq? And who is this government in Iraq that he refers to? Who listens to this government? Do the Kurds in northern Iraq, who are living in what they consider to be part of Kurdistan, do they listen to this government? I don't think so. Do the Sunnis in southern Iraq listen to this government? No. Does the sheikh that controls the Al-Mahdi army listen to this guy? No, he listens to the Iranians. What the hell is he talking about? Sheikh Sattar Abu Risha was head of the Anbar Awakening Council, I love that, a tribal alliance that fought the Sunni Al-Qaeda group in the province of Al-Anbar. At least one of his bodyguards also died when a bomb went off and blew him into red mist. Tore apart Mr. Abu Risha's car near his home. The White House condemned the assassination and pledged to continue to stand with the leaders and people of Iraq. Oh, my God. When Bush made his sneaky little trip into Anbar province back on September 3rd, he talked with and had his picture taken with Abu Risha and other Sunni tribal leaders. And he was quoted as saying at the time, quote, "When you stand on the ground here in Anbar and hear from the people who live here, you can see what the future of Iraq can look like," end quote. Really? You stupid man! Yes! That's the future of Iraq! Tribal leaders being blown to pieces, you dumbass! Can't you open your eyes and see? No, of course not. In a testimony to Congress this week, this half-witted, four-starred freak, General Davis Petraeus, also pointed to improvements in Al-Anbar's security. Now, you want a prediction? Look for there to be a massive increase in bombing and sectarian death and probably U.S. soldiers being killed and Marines being killed in Al-Anbar province because this half-witted jerk has been using it as an example. Why do you think this sheikh got blown into red mist today? Because he had his picture taken with Bush. Because Bush singled him out. Oh, look what we're doing! We're succeeding! I've seen insanity before. I really have. I have crazy people in my own family. I know what crazy looks like. I had an uncle that had to be hospitalized. He was totally schizophrenic to the point where he was delusional. The classic stuff. He'd wake up in the middle of the night and tell his wife that they were pumping poison gas into his bedroom. My poor Uncle Vic. And he was a lawyer. Maybe that was part of the problem. No, don't make jokes. He's dead now. But I know what crazy looks like. I know what it says. And he was my favorite uncle. He was only 7 years older than me. Played football in high school, but he went nuts. Bush is nuts. I've seen nuts up close. It's astonishing. It's just unbelievable. 36 nations helping us. Who? Who are they? Moldova? Do they have 3 secretaries working there typing up death notices? Is that one of our allies? Moldova? Who else is there? Kathy, do you have any idea? Jesus God. This is just total madness. Total madness.
Well, if you believe Bush, when he was speaking last week, apparently there's a lot of Austrian troops that are contributing.
No, those were Australian.
Oh, I could have sworn he said Austrian.
Over at BartCop.com, he has a little excerpt from Robert Perry's new book. Perry has a book out called, Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. Is that Perry's book? Yeah, Robert Perry. Some of the people at Consortium News, I guess a couple other people contributed. Here's the excerpt you can find at BartCop.com. Quote, "We're going to push and push and push until some larger force makes us stop," explained Cheney's legal counsel David Addington, according to Goldsmith's new book, The Terror Presidency. Goldsmith wrote that Addington, quote, "and I presumed his boss, Cheney, viewed power as the absence of constraint," end quote. However, the absence of constraint is synonymous with tyranny. The antithesis of a democratic republic with checks and balances, rule of law, and respect for the will of an informed electorate. As Bush stripped away the inalienable rights guaranteed by the founders in the Constitution, he kept much of us confused with misdirection by asserting he was taking these actions to defend liberty and freedom. Goldsmith encountered the administration's sophistry and the legal opinions that were the cornerstones of Bush's claims of virtually unlimited presidential power in wartime. We're in a war. Goldsmith wrote, quote, "as I absorbed the opinions, I concluded that some were deeply flawed, sloppily reasoned, overboard, and incautious in asserting extraordinary constitutional authority. on behalf of the president, end quote. Goldsmith regards himself as a conservative Republican, though with a rational bent. That's from just a quick excerpt from Robert Perry's new book, Neck Deep. But this statement, we're going to push and push and push until some larger force makes a stop, and Reid and Pelosi say impeachment's off the table. Oh, my God. Cheney views the power that Bush and this foul, filthy presidency has accumulated, that it has come to them as the absence of constraint. Who in the hell is out there to constrain them? That's right, the Congress. And the Congress is doing nothing. The Congress is doing nothing. You know, regardless of what I think of John Edwards or any of these Democrats who are speaking after Bush's speech, to hell with all of you. Just go straight to bloody hell, all of you. All of you Democrats. I don't want to hear any speeches. If I want speeches, I'll listen to my own damn program. I want to see action. I want to see the Democrats remove people who say that with no constraints, they're going to keep going. Unbelievable. So we're supposed to watch this dog and pony show tonight. The part that I listened to before we bailed out, that was a message designed for the terminally dumbass, the base of his support, that 22% percent that still thinks he's Jesus' stepbrother, these asinine Republicans who now will flock to Fox News Channel to see what Sean has to say. Oh, help us, Sean! And who will flock to the Pigman's program tomorrow. Oh, help us, Pigman! Please, Rush, tell us what to do! Oh, and Rush will help them. That's who Bush was talking to. I'm so sick of it. I'm so sick of hearing insanity and inanity being presented to me as a demonstration of leadership. I don't care if it's by Crocker or this half-ass Petraeus or this psychopathic George Bush. I don't care. Or Democrats! Get him out of office. Get him out of office. Abuse of power, that's where you begin. What is wrong with these people? Oh, by the way, it's the first day of Ramadan. Happy Ramadan to all our Muslim listeners. And Rosh Hashanah began yesterday at sundown and ends tomorrow evening. Happy Rosh Hashanah to all our Jewish listeners. Hey, everybody. Hi, how are you? Okay. I can't stand it. I don't know. I just can't stand it. We got a break coming up. Let's take the break. We'll come back and let's get your opinion. Well, we'll get some calls in here. Keep it on topic, this first part. We're going to switch over to some other stuff, coming up a little later in the program. This is just astonishing. My brain feels like somebody has poured glue and none of the synapses can fire. The serotonin reuptake mechanisms are not working. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Approach comes down to this. The terrorists win and America loses.
It's madness. And you can see what's going on. Somebody mentioned it the other night. Was it Will in Michigan? What's his name? Osama bin Laden is Emmanuel Goldstein. This is so classically Orwellian to the extent that you can't say it's classically Orwellian. It's like saying, here, try this. It's called water and it's wet. How in the hell can you? I can't. I'd take a breath. Jesus, my boy. I'm sitting here during the commercials just screaming. Endless war. That's what Winston Smith talked about. Of course, we had three of them then, you know. We had East Asia, Eurasia, and, oh my God, what was the other one, Kathy? East Asia, Eurasia, and Oceania. And the battlefield reports that kept coming in about, well, on the front in Zanzibar, another 5,000 enemy troops were blown up today. We have the new figures here on shoes. Yeah, it was a direct parody of this crazed Soviet Union. But on the other hand, everything that this Bush crime family, what the hell did these people, did they memorize the book? Why didn't they read Catcher in the Rye? Why didn't they memorize that book? You know, go read that one. If you want madness or at least adolescent craziness, there. Go there. Nobody died, did they, in Catcher? Or was there one death? Did somebody die? Did one of the kids' siblings die? I forget now. Jesus, I'm getting mixed up with something else. But it's catching. Now, in 1984, one of the siblings died, Winston Smith's sister, but I'm talking about Catcher in the Rye. I don't remember. But if they want madness, read that book. Why not read Lord of the Flies? Read that one. There's madness for you. That's usually what happens when children are left to their own devices and it breaks down into insanity and murder and mysticism and gods and pig heads and flies and... Yeah, Edwards is on. I don't want to. Let's just listen to a second. Go ahead, bring him up. Senator Edwards.
Bush gave it to him. Now, after General Petraeus reports the surge has produced no progress toward a political solution, what does the president want? More time for the surge to work, when all of us know it won't. Our troops are stuck between a president without a plan to succeed and a Congress without the courage to bring them home. But Congress must answer to the American people. Tell Congress you know the truth. They have the power to end this war, and you expect them to use it. When the president asks for more money and more time, Congress needs to tell him he only gets one choice, a firm timeline for withdrawal. No timeline, no funding, no excuses. It is time to end this war.
I'm John Edwards, and I approve this message.
Yeah, all right, John, and thank you very much. Yeah, sure, and I realize you're not in the legislative branch anymore, and I know you're running for Congress and or from the presidency, and we understand. But let me tell you something, pal, Mr. Edwards, really, with all due respect, okay? We, the people of the United States, have been pounding on the doors, on the portals of power, if you will, in the Democratic Party, in the Congress, to please remove this son of a bitch from office. I don't care how many petitions we sign, Mr. Edwards, Bush is not going to reverse course. I don't care how many petitions we sign, the people that control the purse strings in the United States House are not going to defund this war. It's not going to happen as long as these pigs are in office. John, Senator Edwards, please, please stop coming to us, the American people, with this garbage. This man has to be removed from office. Why can nobody in the Democratic Party leadership get that through their goddamn heads? He's got to be removed from office. You make a nice speech, John. All of you Democrats do. Meanwhile, American soldiers are dying. Families are having their hearts ripped out. Both here and in Iraq. The country is being broken. It's being broken.
And the Democrats are sitting back talking about, well, you've got to prevail upon your Congress to stop the funding. Send an email. That'll work. No, send a regular letter. You remember, Congress will never see it because of the anthrax scare. Notice how that works? Oh, for Christ's sake. Okay, I said the GD word again. I'm sorry, I apologize. No, Senator Edwards, you know, you can buy all the time on MSNBC you want to buy. We the people, the majority of us, the vast majority of us, not 50% plus one, the vast majority, want this over. And nobody responds. The Bush crime family laughs at us. The psychopathic, totally fringed out, nutball base of the Republican Party ignores us. They're waiting for Jesus to come back and flush his hands through all the dead corpses and say, hi-ho, great job. The Democratic Party leadership couldn't care less. They want to be elected. And they're terrified that if they make a stand for the Constitution, their Republican opponent will use it against them. So, Senator Edwards, the slaughter is going to go on. Don't you understand? It's going to continue. Another 18 months. Hundreds, thousands more Americans are going to die. Don't you get it, John? Huh? Until this bastard is removed from office. Doesn't have to be that way, Senator Edwards. But given the leadership we have in this country and the Democratic Party, that is the way it will be. This is Nova M. Welcome back. A couple of hits on the oxygen tank, and I'm just fine. Just kidding. He said Iraq could face a humanitarian crisis, you know, if we left. And if you want proof of his madness, Iraq could face a humanitarian... Jody writes in, Mike, that car bombing, the one that got the shake, that isn't violence. First, it was a car bomb, and they aren't counted. Second, I believe it was Sunni on Sunni violence. So it's not sectarian violence, and it's not counted. See? Things are so much better there now. My favorite line in his spew was, Iraq could face a humanitarian crisis. George, you are insane. Jody. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. But because... so much of this country, so many of our fellow citizens are so unconscious about what's going on. I mean, Jesus, if there was some way to reach out to these people and say, look, you don't have to do anything, just be aware that they're destroying our country, that they're murdering thousands of people as a result of our presence in Iraq, that we're losing soldiers, that the country is broken. It's broken. Just be aware of it. You don't have to do anything. But for Christ's sake, stop walking around in this fog where this jackass can come on the air and say these things. Watch the bounce he gets in the morning, ladies and gentlemen. Huh? What do you want to bet? 6 percentage points up? 12? Huh? That's all this was for. And watch there be a surge in violence in good old pacified Anbar. It's madness. It's madness. Let's do some phone calls. Let's start with Diane, who's calling from Florida, listening on WINZ. Hey, Diane.
Hi, Mike. I've been listening to you for years, and your description tonight of what you would have liked to have heard from the Democrats say about the war criminal Bush's poor excuse for a major speech had me laughing and crying at the same time.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
Mike, you uttered the I word, impeachment, and that's why I'm calling you. I called to tell you tonight that we're bringing David Swanson down here to Miami Saturday to speak at a kickoff rally of our newly formed South Florida Impeachment Coalition.
That's great.
And we picked September 15th because many of us could not go to D.C. for the big peace and impeachment march.
Didn't you send me an email?
I did.
And you wanted me to mention it, and it totally got away from me. It's probably...
Yeah, well, you'll remember now.
Well, you mention it right now. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I just want to tell you that I've been a loyal and active Democrat for years, but I have now had it with my party.
Yeah.
Our Democratic members of Congress, we've lobbied the two of them down here. There's only two. We have Kendrick Meek and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and they're giving lame excuses for not co-sponsoring House Resolution 333 for impeachment of Cheney.
Yeah.
And they're spineless. But we're not, and we are taking the I word out of the closet and putting it back on the table.
Well, that's good.
And some of us are willing to get arrested in order to get media attention to the crimes being committed against our Constitution and our country. We're determined to make impeachment a household word in South Florida, and our website is floridaimpeach.org.
Floridaimpeach.org.
Right. Okay. And I have to tell you that Miami, I call it the apathy capital of the United States. In November 06, I think the turnout was something like 37-39% in an election that was supposed to be so important. So it's pretty hard to get people energized around here, but I think David Swanson's going to help.
If anyone can, it would be David. Let me ask you something that I occasionally ask people who call the program. Why do you think we as a people are not motivated more to remove this man? In other words, why are we so ignorant about what he has done to our country?
Because of the media and because of our leaders. Yeah. I have to tell you, there's one guy here who is the only political person on television that has a local program on Sundays that is political. His name will remain unsaid. And he also writes the column occasionally in the Miami Herald. And when I sent him the information, he said that he hadn't seen anything that looked to him like Bush had committed an impeachable offense, at which time I had to count to 10 before I sent him back a lot of documentation to the contrary, like excerpts from the Downing Street memo and so forth.
It's not Carl Hiaasen, is it?
No way. No,
oh,
no.
Okay.
No, it's a TV personality / Herald writer. No, Hiaasen is wonderful, and we have Leonard Pitts is wonderful.
Right. I read
the Herald is pretty liberal, but they're not doing us any favors on this.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, listen, thanks, Diane.
Okay, if you could mention occasionally floridaimpeach.org and this event that's taking place. They can find out about it at the website on Sunday, Saturday afternoon.
Day after tomorrow.
Yeah, that's
okay. Floridaimpeach.org. I hope a lot of people who listen to WINZ will show up there. Thanks, Diane. I appreciate you checking in. Thank you very much. Marilyn in Vancouver, Washington writes, Mike, I partially listened to Bush's speech. I can't take too much of him for fear that my ears will bleed. We all understand that Bush is a lying sack of you-know-what who has little regard for this country, the Constitution, the troops, or the Iraqi people. Because I know this, I am able to allocate much of what he says to the hole in which it belongs. Marilyn, you have a way with words. However, I find it difficult to listen to Democrats who say it is time for a change when they continue to back Bush's occupation. What the hell was Senator Reid's point? The guy that responded to this. He says that Bush's policy has failed and it's time for a change, but they still continue to fund this idiot's policy. I found myself screaming at the television as It was Jack Reed, when, as Reed was giving the Democratic response. "Do something," I shouted, "do something. I hear progressive talkers say the Democrats are doing the best they can. Are they really, Mike? I doubt it. What happened to what we the people want? Doesn't it matter what we the people want? Why won't they take a stand and do something?" Marilyn Vancouver, any Democratic talk show, any so-called progressive talk show host who says the Democrats are doing the best they can, that talk show host might as well be working for Fox Noise Network or sign on with Rush Limbaugh. I'm serious. And I don't know what progressive talkers are saying that, because I don't listen to any talk radio. None. When Kathy's out and about, she will listen to, we've got Sirius in the car, she'll listen to Sirius satellite radio, the left channel, she'll listen to this, she'll listen to that, she'll listen to our local stuff here, and I get back in the car after she's been in there, and I turn on the radio, and talk radio. I can't. I immediately turn it off. Immediately, and go to Sirius's classical music channel. And for the folks at XM who listen to the program, if I had XM, I'd probably go to your channel, but nobody offered me XM, so. But I don't know any progressive talkers who would be saying that the Democrats are doing everything they can. The Democrats are doing nothing, nothing, nothing. Absolutely. They are obstructionists. They are standing in the way of the fulfillment of what the Constitution says has to happen when you get somebody like George Bush in office. Oh my God, the Democrats are enabling this bastard. The Democrats keep giving him more and more and more power. The Democrats sit back on their asses while he takes more and more and more power. The Democrats keep confirming and have spent 6 years confirming neocon Nazis into positions of power in the cabinet, in the judicial branch, all over the place. No, any progressive that says the Democrats are doing all they can is a damned liar.
And there's news stories all over the place today that the Democrats are just going to give Bush what he wants this time in Iraq again.
Democrats are doing all they can. Any progressive talk show host who says that to you, find someone else to listen to. I'm telling you, this is Nova M Radio.
I don't think it's funny. Cracking up.
Rage on. It's Mike Malloy.
Stop this car. Oh. Baby, get in. It didn't stop driving till he had to go to my bed.
It's 21 past the hour. Daryl in Montgomery writes, Mike, before she died, the late great Molly Ivins wrote that the Democrats' message on Iraq should simply be, quote, "Every day we're in Iraq is making this country less safe," end quote. Rinse, lather, repeat. Yeah, that's true. That's true. Every time these soulless, brain-dead Democrats find a camera on them, they should repeat that. Oh, listen, Wolf, before we go, every day we're in Iraq is making this country less safe. Bob Schieffer, thank you for putting me on CBS Sunday Morning. By the way, Bob, every day we're in Iraq is making this country less safe. Yeah, but you know it's not going to happen, Daryl. And an update on the soldiers who wrote the op-ed piece, the seven soldiers who wrote the op-ed piece for the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, and
One of them, shortly after that, was shot in the head and wounded, is still alive in hospital, either in Europe or in the United States, probably in Germany. I don't know. Maybe he's back in the States. And then the other day, two of them killed in what was first described as an accident. This is from the Associated Press. The mother of a soldier who died in a Baghdad vehicle accident weeks after co-writing New York Times op-ed piece wants the army to explain his death. The August 19th editorial, co-written by 28-year-old Sergeant Omar Mora, was critical of the Pentagon's positive assessment of the Iraq War. Mora, who grew up in Texas City, Texas, enlisted after the 2001 terrorist attacks. His mother, Olga Capitillo, says she wants to know details of how her son died. Capitillo said that in the weeks since writing the piece with six other active duty soldiers, Mora had seemed depressed and withdrawn. Mora and co-author Sergeant Yance Gray of Ismay, Montana, died in the vehicle accident along with five other U.S. soldiers and two detainees. The single vehicle accident also wounded 11 other soldiers and one detainee. The military has not mentioned hostile fire when referring to the accident. So they had a car wreck, and am I reading this right? Mora and Yance Gray died in the vehicle accident along with five other U.S. soldiers and two detainees. That's nine people died in that car wreck, Kathy? And 11 other U.S. soldiers and one detainee were wounded? This stinks of another Pat Tillman story, doesn't it? Huh? Doesn't it? Oh, my God. I are we sure the AP has that story right? Nine people died in that single vehicle. What the hell were they driving? A motorhome? Jesus, God. Another email here, and then a break, and then your phone calls. George in Seattle writes, the other night, before I get to George's email, I got all pissed off, sort of, or I was yelling at the writers in the blogosphere who were talking about three battle groups wound up in the Persian Gulf, and it turns out that Admiral William Fallon had prevented the third one from going, and Fallon is on the record as saying Iran will not be invaded on his watch. And I got a little testy with some of the bloggers who report all the hysterical stuff. And I'm a hysteric. You know, it takes one to know one. I'm not busting them because they're hysterical. Hell, I'm a hysteric. But, anyway, George writes the following. Mike, in regards to Iran, I wouldn't be jumping down the throats of the bloggers who are just trying to keep people informed when mainstream media has sold us out. My understanding of what happened with the battle groups is that the third battle group was sent to Iran, but instead of going directly to the Persian Gulf, it took the so-called scenic route and arrived after the second battle group was already rotating out. The attack plan on Iraq, but I think he means Iran here, the attack plan on Iran requires three carrier battle groups. So apparently what happened was that Admiral Fallon delayed the third group enough so that the second group had to leave before the third group arrived. Therefore, the Iran attack plan could not be implemented. The bloggers who wrote that a third battle group was on its way to Iran were right. They were just not aware that Admiral Fallon would scuttle Bush's attack plans. George in Seattle. Okay, I'm certainly will accept that correction. I'm at the point, George, where it's hard for me to trust or believe anything. You know what I'm saying? And I hate that because isn't that just like a silly little millimeter away from full blown paranoia? It's difficult, I swear to God, for me to believe anything. I go to Daily Coast and read stuff. Nah, there is one person I believe in, and that's Bart Kopp. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. This is Nova M Radio.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
About 26 before the hour, a couple of you sent me the story. 9 U.S. troops killed in Iraq, the military announced Monday, including 7 who died in a vehicle accident in northwestern Baghdad. The accident occurred early Monday when an armored truck drove off a raised highway in the Shula area, said so-and-so. They believe a tire blowout and possibly another mechanical failure caused the driver to lose control. Spokesman said, quote, the vehicle went off a raised highway with all the soldiers in the back of it. There was no enemy contact involved at the time. It was strictly an accident, end quote. At the time of the crash, the soldiers were returning from a raid against militiamen and were transporting detainees. 2 of the detainees died in the crash. Another was injured. 11 U.S. soldiers also were injured. Okay, excuse me, I wasn't aware that that many, and thanks to several people who sent it in, I wasn't aware that it occurred in a massive event like that. Now, since I said it about progressive talk show hosts who ask you to support Democrats, you know, I've gotten a whole bunch of emails here, and you're naming the names of the people who are saying just that. Most of them work for Air America, but I'm sorry. You know, and the reasons for supporting them, I'm hearing all kinds of stuff here that some of my liberal or progressive colleagues are using reasons like, you can't remove him from office because there are not 67 votes in the Senate, whatever it would take to remove this son of a bitch, and that's not my point. Other people are saying, well, you know, I heard so and so progressive talk show host say, do you honestly think that if the Democrats cut off funding somehow, that Bush would then say, oh, okay, you win, and return the troops? No, he would leave them there defenseless. You people are not you people. I have no complaint with you folks. The Democrat or the progressive or the liberal talkers are missing the point. You don't negotiate with a terrorist. Gee, where have I heard that before? In this case, it's George Bush. You don't try to get this pig to do something. You remove him from office. And if you can't remove him because you don't have the whatever 67 votes it takes, how do they know unless they try? That's A. Here's B. In the process of impeaching this war criminal, maybe the American people would wake up. Maybe C-SPAN, maybe MSNBC, maybe somebody would carry the impeachment hearings like they did with Clinton. 24/7. When they're on the air. Maybe we could see Democrats marching across the rotunda between the House and the Senate to approach the Senate with their articles of impeachment after they were voted out of the House committee. Maybe that. But to sit back and say no. Call the Republicans, not the Democrats. Oh, please give me a break. Call what Republican? And say what?
I'm not going to vote for you again.
Oh, stop it. If this sets me apart from my colleagues on the left, too bad. Goodbye, everybody. See ya. You don't negotiate with a psychopath. You don't even attempt. And every single Republican office holder is to some degree crazier than hell because they support this. And you damn sure don't try to negotiate with Bush. All these people understand is one thing. I had the quote for you tonight from Robert Perry's new book. He's quoting Goldsmith as saying that Cheney and Addington, they said, we're going to push and push and push and push until someone stops us. Hello? What does that mean? That phone calls to Republicans are going to work? That's sending email messages to the White House? Oh, please! Any Democrat or progressive talk show host who tells you to sit back on your ass and wait for the Democrats to do something is misleading you. These people don't care, these Bush crime family thugs. And every single Republican, even the so-called Northeast liberals, Republicans, don't care. They're into power. How do you wrest power away from madmen? Huh? What did Mao say? Where does all power emanate from? Huh? You can take that figuratively or literally. But if you think sending email messages or petitions or whatever the hell vehicle you want to use to Republicans is going to get their attention, oh my God. Here's a simple fact. I know a couple of them are dodgy, but the Democrats are in control of the House and the Senate. Very slim margin. But on these committees, they have more than a one-vote margin, especially on the House Judiciary Committee. And all they have to do is begin the process. Begin the process. Get the attention. Throw this country into absolute turmoil. Let people know, God damn it, what's it going to take to wake America up? Bush going on television, followed by John Edwards? Please! You want to wake America up to the crimes against humanity, crimes against the Constitution, the violations of domestic law, constitutional law, international law, treaties? You want to get people's attention on that? How are you going to do it? Huh? An article in New York Times? No. Something on some half-assed cable television show? No. How are you going to do it? Impeachment. Start the process. Start it. Let Americans see what the hell these people have done and are doing and will continue to do. Democrats are the enablers. Democrats are the battered spouses. Democrats are the people living with a drug-addicted, drug-addled alcoholic who keeps saying, oh, well, you know, he's got a lot on his mind. Jesus, God. I don't listen to talk radio. If some of my colleagues are saying, back off, the Democrats are doing all they can. What, are they drunk, delusional, out of their minds? Democrats are doing nothing! So, that's where I stand. But you knew that. Back to your phone calls. Ron is calling from Davis, California, listening on KSAC. Ron, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right.
No, you're not. You're like me. You're just ready to just go wacko. I'm a couple of years older than you. I lived through the 60s, and it's that same horrible feeling.
Excuse me, Ron. You're not a couple of years older than me.
Yes, I am. I'm 66, going to 67.
Okay.
I'm guessing. I'm listening to you for 3.5 years, brother. So.
All right.
Anyway, I read Bush on the Couch, which belies the term is the name of the book is a little bit humorous, but it's a deadly serious book. So here's the way I look at it. A, it's not a question of don't or you shouldn't negotiate with Bush. It's actually you cannot. You cannot communicate with Bush.
No.
I'm just going to run this by real quickly because I did a lot of analysis of Frank's book, and I have a psychological background, blah, 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 but you got a series of, I would say, four concentric rings. You got Bush's White House, and they're just reflections of his twisted psyche. And he's terribly afraid. It's like peeling an onion, and you get to nothing except a frightened little thing. You got the next concentric circle would be all the Republicans in the world. And then you got the third concentric cycle, which is the media. Now, those three concentric cycles differ in intensity, but they're all of them, and you hit it right, they're all enablers. Now, the fourth concentric circle would be the Democrats, and they are still enabling, but they aren't as powerful, and they're shaky. But at this point, and I hate to be a pessimist or a realist, but I don't see any way of penetrating those four concentric circles unless It's like when it was suddenly Watts caught on fire. And I don't even remember the reason why, but I was in Southern California and I could see the flames. And I really think you're right, by the way, about this military thing that, and we're out of the loop on it, but somehow if we could get Fallon or people like that to begin testifying, we might get a nibble. We got to get a nibble someplace. Or it's like that black minister, former officer, who was half beaten to death and he had ligaments torn in his ankle this week.
Yeah, for wanting to hear the
Yeah, hands. And so yeah. That could get, you know, the blacks and the Latinos going. But you need something. But to rely, like some of the progressive talk shows do, on the process of logic and reason and
yeah,
rules,
but let me interrupt because we're out of time. What are we going to do to get the whites going?
See, the same thing. The whites aren't. No, they're not going to do anything, Mike. I hate to tell you.
You know,
you and I are different because we've been there, done that in the 60s. I know there's 20 million bomb craters in Vietnam still.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's horrific. It was much more horrific than this. However, this is more catastrophic worldwide because of nukes.
Oh,
I really don't know, other than keep it up, but, you know, check your blood pressure every 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, I do that. But I think any progressive talk show host who is not talking impeachment, at least on every program, is making an error, is making
Absolutely.
A mistake.
Absolutely, because all you need is a nibble. All you need is somebody
right.
to stand up and get just really pissed.
And just get the hearings going.
Yeah, I mean,
let some of the evidence come out. Let some of the truth
Absolutely.
Truth come
yeah,
out.
Yeah, Nixon split the minute somebody whispered, by the way, they're going to start impeachment hearings. He was gone.
That's right. Ron, I got to go. Thank All you. Right. I appreciate what you had to say, pal. Take care.
Hey, it's good enough for Kucinich.
Yeah, that's true. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Faster than a flying monkey, more powerful than a special prosecutor, it's Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's about 8:30 before the hour. One last thing on my rant about progressive talk show hosts who tell you to back off and don't go after the Democrats. You all have used in your emails to me tonight several names that with whom I've appeared at places around the country and people I know, people I've worked with, yada, yada. And, you know, what you are saying is, you know, how these are your friends. And I it must be difficult, Malloy, for you to say things that your friends are. Look, let me tell you something. The same thing that they say about Washington applies in talk radio. You want a friend? Get a dog. I have no friends in talk radio. I have people I've worked with. I have acquaintances. I have people I see occasionally. As a matter of fact, my circle of friends, our caller was talking about concentric circles. You know, Kathy and Molly are right in the middle, and then I've got on the next ring, I have four or five people I've known for 30 years, and beyond that, it's a vast wasteland. I have a lot of email correspondents, people who I really appreciate, who stay in touch with me, who listen to this program. Some of you in media business, some of you not. And you know, people who write on a regular basis, and I always feel guilty because I can't respond to all of them. But, I don't have friends in talk radio. I do not. And I'll guarantee you something. If you ask other talk show hosts the same thing, progressives, they'll tell you the same thing. This is not a party. This is not party central. This is an isolating business. It is. Especially when so many people who do talk radio now like I do, like Hartman does, like I could go down the list here, but we don't go to a radio station to do our program. We operate in a studio that is usually something we put together, some of us in our homes, some of us have a studio somewhere, and we use ISDN lines and satellite uplinks and all this stuff. We don't work at radio. I've worked at radio stations before where there is a sense of community, but not anymore. This, you know, you can do talk radio from anywhere on the planet if you can get an ISDN line and a satellite uplink somewhere down the or an internet broadband internet connection, you're in business. But I don't have friends in talk radio. I'm not trying to sound like a jackass here, but it's just a fact. I don't have any friends in this business. This is from Ross. Yeah, from Ross. We were talking, Bush talked tonight about 36 coalition partners. I don't know if he meant now, which is absolutely not true, or 36 coalition partners when we began his invasion. That's not true either. But here's who's left. Ross went on the web, and this was current as of February this year. UK, 7,500. South Korea, 2,300. Australia, 850. Poland, 900. Romania, 865. Denmark, 460. El Salvador, 380. The country of Georgia, 300. Azerbaijan, 150. Bulgaria, 150. Latvia, 136. Albania, 120. Czech Republic, 100. Mongolia, 100. Lithuania, 50. Armenia, 46. Bosnia-Herzegovina, 37, Estonia, 34, Macedonia, 33, Kazakhstan, 29, Moldova, 12. Those that left as of February, Fiji, Hungary, Nicaragua, Spain, Dominican Republic, Honduras, Philippines, Thailand, New Zealand, Tonga, great ally, Portugal, Singapore, Norway, Ukraine, Netherlands, Japan, Italy, and Slovakia. God, oh my God, it is so difficult wandering around barefoot in George Bush's death fantasy. Just death fantasy, that's all this is. We're about ready for a break here, so I'm just hold on. I'll get to you right after the break. And John Boehner, did you hear that, the Republican leader? On Blitzer's program the other day, Blitzer said, how much longer will U.S. taxpayers have to shell out $2 billion a week or $3 billion a week, as some now are suggesting the cost is going to endure? The loss in blood, the Americans who are killed very much, how much longer do you think this commitment, this military commitment, is going to require? Here's John Boehner's answer. I think General Petraeus outlined it pretty clearly. We're making success. We're making success. We need to firm up those successes. We need to continue our effort here because, Wolf, long term, the investment that we're making today will be a small price if we're able to stop Al-Qaeda here, if we're able to stabilize the Middle East. It's not only going to be a small price for the near future, but think about the future for our kids and their kids. Oh, my God. Let's call up, you son of a bitch, the 3,700 families who have watched their son, their daughter, their husband, their mom die in this useless, needless, criminal act of George W. Bush. Call them up, Boehner! Call them up! And ask them if they considered their kid an investment or a small price. You filthy, filthy Republican! Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. Got an email here from Kim with VeteransAgainstTorture.com and VeteransForPeace.org. And Kim writes, we're hoping to have at least 4,000 people sign up for the massive die-in scheduled to take place at the Congress as they debate more funds for Iraq. Participants should consider the possibility of arrest as a result of taking part in this action. To sign up as a participant or for more information, go to SCPT15.org. SCPT15.org. That's Saturday, isn't it, Kathy? Isn't that Saturday the 15th? 4,000. Okay. All right. Well, I've got a couple more emails here, but let's go to your phone calls, because some of you have been holding on a long time. Starting with Paula, who is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey, listening on the Internet. Hey, Paula.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm hanging out, drinking wine, listening with my friends at the DU Truth Seeker thread. We're here every night. If you care to drop by.
Well, thank you.
I am so glad you're talking about the Democrats in action. I can't begin to tell you how frustrated I am with what they're not doing. And not only am I frustrated with what they're not doing, I'm frustrated in that they can't learn from their mistake. I mean, remember when Republicans were threatening to go nuclear on them?
Oh, sure.
If they dared filibuster?
Oh, sure.
Well, you know what? What if they said, we're going to filibuster? Go ahead, go nuclear. Where would they be now? In the catbird seat.
Yeah.
And remember when they had, you know, Ned Lamont ran against Joe Lieberman and won the party's nomination, and the Democrats as a party gave him, at best, lackluster support.
That's right.
At best. And what did it get them? Lieberman in the Senate again. Can you imagine if they came out at as a party and turned their backs on Lieberman? They wouldn't have him holding his, you know, threatening to switch sides every 5 minutes.
Right, and he is such, he's such a Republican apologist. I think he took part in that Sean Hannity, Ollie North event.
Oh, God, a great adventure. I'm so glad we didn't renew our season tickets this year. I am so glad.
Is that where it was?
Yeah. Lame-ass park with a bad parking lot, let me tell you. It's, I mean, and they never learn. And then with this, like last time, when they got the bill that they passed with the crappy timeline, at least it was something. And Chimpy vetoed it. Well, you send them back the same bill and you tell them, this is all you're getting. And then you get on the Sunday shows and you go on, you know, Spitball and all those other shows and you say, listen, he vetoed funding for the troops. We gave him funding.
Sure.
He didn't like our terms. Too bad.
And the Democrats are just terrified to do that. They're spineless. They're cowards.
And it just drives me nuts. And I'm like, I'm unemployed. Like, freaking hire me. I'll, like, be your strategist for you. I mean, it's no, and I'm not a genius. I'm not really not that bright. All it takes is, you know what I mean? Like, you get bullied a few times, you learn how to handle it. It's
isn't
ridiculous.
That the truth? But you know what to do, Paula.
But why don't they? Why do they? I swear to God, I think the consultants they use are RNC moles.
I think they are, too.
I think they're RNC moles. I swear to God, that's the only explanation for it and why they continue to take their advice. I mean, were they all born with kick-me signs on their back?
It appears to be that way. As Barkop calls them, they're all pink tutu Democrats. They're little ballerinas. And not that there's anything wrong with ballerinas, but, you know, grown men, I don't think, make very good ballerinas. Now, for all you male ballet dancers out there, I'm saying ballerina, not ballet dancer. Oh, my God. But I get your point, Paula. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. You've made more sense tonight in 5 minutes than I've made all night in 2 hours. Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Mike. I'm glad the wine hasn't impacted my speech too badly.
Good for you. Bye-bye. I appreciate it. Oh, one clarification, because I got a couple of emails here about not having friends in this business. Peter Werby is a friend. But Peter Werby is not really in this business. He's retired. He does a one-night-a-week show in Detroit, Sunday night. He's a one-man institution in Detroit. He's been, that's his hometown. He's been active in this, Detroit justice actions for 40, 45 years. And he occasionally substitutes for me. So, yeah, Peter's an exception, but he's what I was saying, people in this business, people who do this work, you don't make friends in this business. Well, I don't. You know, they're people I like, you know. I would do anything for Stephanie Miller. All right, Kathy, don't look at me like that. But you know what I mean. Diana is calling from Olympia, Washington, listening via the internet. Hey, Diana.
Hi.
Hi.
Mike Malloy, my favorite, my husband's favorite.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, Mike, you know, I'm sounding happy, but I'm always kind of sad lately because of this whole thing that's going on. But I'm going to get, you know, I go through this sadness like you do. I hear you moaning and groaning and yelling, and I just feel it deep down, and so does my husband. But, you know, this thing about enabling really hit me because I'm reading a book called The Third Reich, A New History by Michael Burley, and he talks about the Enabling Act that they passed in Germany, the Reichstag did, and it was euphemistically, the title of that act was called The Law for the Alleviation of the People, of the People's and the Reich's misery. And and the, you know, after they passed that Enabling Act in 1933, they didn't pass any laws. Oh, well, they passed seven laws, but the most far-reaching law that they passed was called the Nuremberg Laws, which we all know was a Jewish annihilation law. The Jews could not be citizens, marry, have intercourse with Aryans. No Aryans were employed in Jewish homes, and no hoisting a German flag by Jews.
And do you know that's one of the reasons we had the trials at Nuremberg? But go ahead.
Well, and this all gets back to this thing that, you know, it took a certain amount of years for all this enabling to go on. And now we need some disenablers in the Congress to act like real men and women and act like protectors of our Constitution, and I do like it when Kucinich holds up that little Constitution.
Yes, yes.
And, but I actually am supporting sort of Edwards and Obama, but I don't know what I'm doing. All I do is I keep praying for some deep throat to come along, and it only took 4 months to impeach Nixon and 3 months to impeach Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And we need somebody heroic. God, I wish you were a congressman, Mike. I wish you were.
I'd be dead.
No, you wouldn't. You've got the...
I'd be assassinated.
Blarney Stone is right in your back pocket, buddy. You've got the touch of the Irish Blarney, and I love you. And but anyhow, this is it. We are in the middle of a fascist type of thing. And the parliament emasculated itself in Germany, and they became a redundant prop to this dictator Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Now we are having this same kind of thinking. We're becoming redundant, our Congress, and we have to annihilate this man with words like you do so brilliantly.
Well, I hear what you're saying. Thanks for the nice words about the program and for your call. Thank you, Diane. I appreciate it. We'll chat again. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
He's the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Tim in San Diego writes in, Mike, on the eve of a complete stand down by the Air Force for the first time since 9/11, I heard you ask why so many in this country are so ignorant as to the madness and corruption of this fascist government. The better question may be why so many choose to be ignorant. Excuse me. Is it rampant infantilism? Is it laziness, or is it something else entirely? I'd like to offer up this quote from a speech by Ben Franklin, which he offered in regards to the creation of the Constitution. Quote, I agree to this Constitution, with all its faults, if they are such, because I think a general government necessary for us. And there is no form of government but what may be a blessing to the people if well administered, and believe farther that this is likely to be well administered for a couple of years, and can only end in despotism, as other forms have done before it, when the people shall become so corrupted as to need the despotic government, being incapable of any other. End quote. And Tim writes, maybe Franklin knew us better than we know ourselves. They were very, very intelligent men, maybe not in the context of what we know now, but in beliefs and tenets of the Enlightenment and what was had surged across Europe and was now going to be bounced back after our revolution, the French Revolution, which of course resulted in something that nobody anticipated, the Terror. And what came out of the Terror? Napoleon, another despot. So the framers, I believe, in this country, the people who put the Constitution together, worked very well with what they had and what they believed to be proper conduct. They were slave owners. They were very anti-woman. Women were not even considered capable of voting. On and on and on and on. They were active participants in setting up policies that would result in genocide against the people who lived here. So, you know, you can make case after case after case after case against the framers. On the other hand, in the context of what they were trying to do, some of them were, by God, geniuses in a philosophical sense, in a what other sense? In an historical sense, and for their time, in an ethical and moral sense. But they were also, I think, especially some of them, I think Adams, and I think certainly Franklin, and some of the others were hard, cold realists, almost to the point of being cynics. And I think Franklin made some good points here. And thanks, Tim, for sending that quote in. It was an excellent quote. Back to your phone calls. Mike is calling from Newcastle, PA, listening via the Internet. Hey, Mike.
Oh, hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Oh, good. I had goosebumps today because I tuned you in like I do every night. I was crossing my fingers saying, please, again, what you're saying about the progressive radio show host and a lot of Democrats. And basically, it's good cop, bad cop. I mean, you got to have somebody saying the right things for one segment of the population, but when it's just a bunch of rhetoric and you can't distinguish. I've called in other progressive radio shows. I actually have the screeners yelling at me. What do you want the Democrats to do? They won't let me on the air. Mm. And I just say that exert some political will, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, the one caller you had mentioning the Third Reich, real quick, in 2002, we had a Peace and Justice Conference. And this old lady, she looked frail. She was about 80-some years old. And I'm like, oh, boy, she's going to talk to us? She didn't need a microphone. She was loud and crisp. When she talked about growing up in Germany, in the 1930s, just like Gore Vidal has talked about growing up in that time period. But this woman lived through that. And when she was done talking, the tears were actually leaping from my eyeballs.
Mm.
And I looked around, and not everyone was affected like I was. But what she was trying to say was, I lived through all that stuff you talk about. And let me tell you, this is in 2002, before Katrina, before all this, Pat Tillman, all this. And she said, what I see is going to be much worse. I mean, the tears were flying out of my eyeballs. And to hear other people who can talk about Prescott Bush or talk about 9/11 anomalies and talk about, and then they go right back to saying, I think what Edwards does was pretty good, or you know, Nancy Pelosi's trying her best. It makes me want to puke. We live in a society of children, and Mike Malloy is the real deal. I just want to tell you, you're the real deal. I've even called in before and to disagree with you, and you actually have a conversation with me. And I actually felt bad because I agree with you 99% of the time. And last time I called in, I hassled with you a little bit over something with Gravel. Remember when Gravel and you went at it? Yeah. But you were great about it. And that's the whole thing. You call it like it is. You're not. We just live in a society of children. They somehow want some leader, you know, somebody to take them by the hand, and they're going to be lost, you know.
Yeah, I agree with that. We really have been infantilized in this society to greater or lesser degrees. I feel it in me half the time. A lot of times, you know, it's all I can do just to wake up in the morning and stay home because, you know, I don't want to participate in this crap, you know, and spend time with a real 3-year-old, the one I have. You know, instead of getting out here and dealing in the world. And that's not an elitist attitude. It's an attitude of fear and loathing. That's all. Just fear and loathing. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate you checking in, pal. I got to leave it there. This is Nova M Radio.
But I heard a young man cry.
This is Laura Pigglesbush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
This is from... Nicola, Mike, I just happened to be awake to hear someone from Florida tell you about an impeachment event being held there on September 15th and wanted you to know that we're doing another one in San Francisco between 1 and 2:30 p.m. at Chrissy Field in San Francisco. We did one back in January and another on April 28th in which we spell out the word impeach now, the words impeach now on Ocean Beach, this time with the Golden Gate Bridge in the background. We're hoping to catch even more eyeballs that might get the mainstream media to cover us and get the word spread out across the nation to inspire hope in people and others who aren't lucky enough to be able to participate in the flesh. The men who framed our Constitution took very seriously the possibility of the need for a president to be removed from office. And if George Bush's devastating reign hasn't convinced the American people that we need to pursue the impeachment process they carefully put forward, I don't know if there's any point at all to having it. Nicola. So in San Francisco, there's also the event in D.C., Miami. So if you're so inclined, you know, I said the next massive march on Washington or whatever it's called that I go to, I go armed. But that doesn't rule out these regional or local events where people do get together and say, enough of this, enough of this. Oh, and a couple folks sent this to me. This is dated yesterday. It's a press release from the White House, whitehouse.gov. Consistent with section so-and-so of the National Emergencies Act, signed by Bush, I am continuing for 1 year the national emergency I declared on September 14th, 2001, with respect to the terrorist attacks at the World Trade Center in New York, the Pentagon, and aboard United Airlines Flight 93, and the continuing and immediate threat of further attacks on the U.S. Because the terrorist threat continues, the national emergency declared on September 14, 2001, last extended on September 5th, 2006, and the powers and authorities adopted to deal with that emergency must continue, in effect, beyond September 14th, 2007. Therefore, I am continuing in effect for an additional year the national emergency I declared on September 14, 2001 with respect to the terrorist threat. This notice shall be published in the Federal Register and transmitted to Congress. George W. Bush. So, we still live under a national terror alert, which gives even more extraordinary powers to this twit. Back to your phone calls. Flo is calling from Sunrise, Florida, listening on WINZ. Hey, Flo.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I was listening to Keith Olbermann tonight, and something caught my attention. He said the Kurdish regional government, Dallas-based Hunt Oil,
yes,
owned by Ray L. Hunt,
yeah,
made a deal with made the oil deal. So have you heard about that yet?
I have not, but if Olbermann said it, I certainly accept it.
And I would like Nancy Pelosi to put impeachment back on the table and serve it as a main dish, I think, and
yeah,
take mm-hmm. off the table any compromises with Bush and the Republican Party.
Or this attitude of helplessness. The Democrats are displaying total helplessness in the face of these tyrants, and it infects us. You know, you have leaders of your own party telling you that they're helpless, that they can't do anything. Well, we don't have enough allies. We don't have enough votes. Well, you know, maybe the next time we can't. Even when they were in the minority, well, we're not going to filibuster because, well, that's just not what we do, and we'll wait. And look what we got on the Supreme Court from that kind of attitude.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes on and on. The Democrats are so intimidated. Every time they try to stick their heads up, you get this screaming from the right wing that says, "You voted for the Iraq War resolution." And they don't respond by saying, "Yeah, because you lied to us, because you told us stuff that wasn't true." No. Impeach. Remove this thug. Get him out of office. Until I hear Democrats doing that, I have zero respect for the leadership of this party. None.
Well,
nothing. Absolute zero.
If they can't do it, they're the only people that can do anything. That's why I'm so frustrated.
I hear you.
Can't do it. If they can't do their job, they were put in there to end this war, then maybe they shouldn't have that job.
And layered right behind that are the requirements of the Constitution. When the Congress no longer responds to the will of the people, what does that mean? Oh, my God. I'll tell you what it means, the quick answer. We don't live in a democratic republic anymore. We live in some kind of a twisted, other dimensional form of government that is not quite yet a military dictatorship or a fascist dictatorship, certainly no longer a democratic republic, drifting into this favorite term of these neocons, a unitary form of government. That is dictatorship. I don't care how you spin that. Unitary, that's dictatorship.
Yeah, the unitary executive.
Right. So, you know, for the Democrats to whine and say there's nothing we can do, we don't have the vote, what they're saying is we don't have the courage, we don't have we don't believe in our constituents, we don't respect the majority of the American public, we're just trying to save our jobs, that's all, leave us alone, please leave us alone, we got so many things to worry about, oh God, don't keep saying impeachment, oh, leave us alone.
Well, and my congresswoman,
go ahead.
I got a response from Debbie Westman Schulzen. She said she doesn't want to impeach because, well, they just don't have time. They have more important things to do.
Oh, my God.
But Dennis Kucinich said the funding is in the pipeline to bring the troops home. We don't need to keep funding the war.
Well, I...
Is that true?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I don't know who to support. I've given money to him. I like Edwards. I just don't know. And down in Florida, we don't know if our vote counts yet.
I know. I've been following that in the New York Times and in the Atlanta paper.
The Sarasota congressman took that election away from the Democrat, and the votes weren't even counted because we can't count our votes if we have to.
That raises the question: why didn't the Democratic Party, the National Democratic Party, send 5,000 screaming volunteers down to Sarasota, where that occurred. It was Sarasota, right?
Yeah.
down to Sarasota and start pounding on the street. They don't have to destroy property. Take garbage can lids and pipes, like the Irish did against the British troops, and just lean out the windows and beat on the garbage can lids, beat on the pans and pots, and call attention to what's happening. They won't even do that.
Well, I yell and scream all the time, but I guess they're not listening to me.
I hear you. Well, thanks, Flo. Thanks for checking in, all right?
Okay, Mike.
Take care. You know, that's the basis. If you go back and listen to certain U2 albums, you hear that sound of the pots and pans, the Irish women the Catholic Irish women who were protesting the British army, the occupation in Northern Ireland. And you hear that sound, that clanging. Do we have any of that handy? Next time you listen to U2, what were some of those CDs, Kathy? Huh? Is Joshua Tree? I think has a couple of those songs with that clanging. You can hear it. And every time something like this happens. Like what Flo was just talking about. And the Democratic Party, it's their responsibility to do this, to lend credence to it. Oh, sure, 50 or 60 locals could go out and start beating on pans and pots and screaming about how something was stolen. And that's fine. But why not do it in conjunction with the leadership of the Democratic Party? Does that mean Howard Dean? Well, he's the head of the party. He's not the head of the party in Congress. But remember when they were going to recount the votes in some of the precincts down in Florida? And what did these Republican animals do? They turned loose attack dogs to go down there and beat on the walls and beat on the windows and totally intimidated the vote counters. Remember that? The sons of bitches. And that was supposed to have been, just a spontaneous... the demonstration, we're looking for justice and the votes. It turned out they were all Republican operatives. And the Democrats, the dumbass Democrats, this happens all the time. I'm not suggesting beating on walls or destroying property. It's a public street. You stand in front of the last election theft on the street with your kettle, with your pot, the metal kind, and beat the hell out of it. Thanks to the crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program out of our flagship station, KPHX in Phoenix, and also answered your calls. Billy Foster, a chat room moderator. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Catherine Bay, our executive producer. Ready for what's next? Ready to duck? Ready to dive? Ready to say I'm glad to be alive? I'm ready. Ready for the push. Ready for the push. I'm ready for the gridlock. I'm ready to take it to the street. Ready for the shuffle. Ready for the deal. Ready to let go of the steering wheel. I'm ready. Ready for the crush. Gee, I wonder what he's talking about. Rush hour in downtown Dublin, huh? Yeah. Back to your phone calls. Joe is calling from Tucson, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Mike. You know, every time I hear the Congress talking about what a fruitless endeavor it'd be to, because they don't have the votes and they don't have, you know, and they don't have the time and everything, the only picture that flashes in my mind is that young gentleman who stood in Tiananmen Square in front of the tanks and screwed up the whole march, you know.
Yeah, that was one of the most powerful photographs I've ever seen in my life. Even now, all these years later, 20 years later, when I see that photograph, I choke up. I mean, to think that a human being living in the kind of murderous dictatorship that was and still is, only in a different form, China, to stand there with his sack and his little briefcase, and to face down a line of tanks. I mean, we don't, I'll only speak for me. I can't even get my mind around that kind of bravery and courage, Joe.
And you know, and exactly, you know, so every time, you know, I wish these people would screw up their nads or their eggs, whichever applies, and put that picture in their mind. So it's a fruitless endeavor. Somebody, it has to start somewhere, and I wish they would bear that picture in their mind, because that's what always flashes in my head every time I hear them say, well, you know, we don't have the votes or whatever excuse they've got.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, that was one of the most powerful, iconic images I think I've ever seen. Thanks, Joe. Thanks for reminding us of that. I appreciate your call. All right, take care.
Thank you, Mike. Bye.
All right, bye-bye. That image that Joe's talking about, oh my God, you all know what he's talking about. Unbelievable. And we were watching, it on live television. And I remember whoever it was, one of American Networks who was doing the reporting said, well, look at that. Look at this man who's just run out here in the middle of the road. And to watch that on live TV where you know any second they're going to open up on him with those 50 caliber machine guns inside that tank. Just unbelievable image. Leonard is calling from Glendale, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Leonard, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's an honor, and thank you for just giving inspiration, Mike. I just want to call in. I've called you before, but I'm just sick and tired of this king always using my fellow soldiers as props. You know, he's very well aware of the letters that happened and now the very suspicious deaths of these soldiers. And he always brings in, at the end of his speech, like he did tonight, you know, an American soldier who loved what he was doing. He was going down to his death. You know, we have to keep stoking this meat grinder. So I just want to tell you, Mike, I appreciate you bringing that out. I've seen some, when I was in Iraq, I saw some strange things happening when people spoke out. And you wouldn't probably be surprised, but at what military cabals are going on over there, because our CIA and our officers that were working with the Iraqi police stations, let me just say there are some strange things going on. So I think there could be contact between some of the emissaries of this government making things look like soldiers are being killed accidentally that just happened to speak out. So I'm just sick of this president using my fellow soldiers as a military prop. They are having a hard time speaking out sometimes, and you are not wasting your time, and your listeners are not wasting your time. Please help save my fellow soldiers' lives from these needless deaths that are going on over there. These fascists have got to be stopped, Mike, and I just want to thank you very much. You give me inspiration. You have a good evening there.
All right, Leonard, thanks. Appreciate you checking in, pal.
All right.
Take care. We'll talk again. I wanted to mention this the other night. Bart in Wichita reminded me, September 12th, which was... today's the 13th, right, Kathy? Yeah, yesterday was the 30th anniversary of the death of Stephen Biko, the anti-apartheid activist, the black man in South Africa who was beaten to death in his cell. I find it staggering that it was 30 years ago. Just incredible. You know, you reach an age, and trust me, you people under 40, you reach an age where things that happened 25, 30 years ago seem that, was that 6 months ago? I'm telling you, time accelerates. But Stephen Biko, who the white apartheid police, and remember, this was a government that Reagan supported, Botha, P.W. Botha, Jesse Helms, these killers, these dictators, these murderers in South Africa, were supported by the United States government, which is no surprise. But yesterday, the 30th anniversary of the death of Stephen Biko, B-I-K-O. If you don't know who he was, look him up. Stephen Biko, B-I-K-O. Is that it? I guess that's it for tonight. Thanks for hanging with me. I appreciate it very much. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Really, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.